Hey guys, thanks for coming over. This is you've never been inside my house. This is where I live.
Wow. Yeah.
It's pretty, great.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks
for having us. Yeah.
It's good to have you.
Can't wait to get my hands on this virtual boy of yours.
Oh no.
Yeah, I mean it's gonna be swell, I guess. You know, I've got
it. Where's he hiding?
I already know. I already know. Heather, he's made a big mistake.
I don't understand it. What we all knew we were coming over to play Virtual Boy.
I know,
right?
But think about those two words separately. He thinks it's something else.
He's playing with Virtual Boy. He's playing
with. Can I get some alone time with this Virtual Boy?
Of course you can, man. No problem whatsoever.
No, Heather.
What?
I.
What am I missing?
You're missing it, too. You don't get what's going on here.
All right, so Nick is excited to play with my small, kept in the garage, Virtual Boy.
Can't wait to strap that Virtual Boy onto my face and get my hands all over its parts.
Maybe I don't know what's going on here. Maybe I am wrong and I thought I was coming here for something else.
I can play Mario's Tennis, which I've always wanted to experience.
See,
what are you thinking,
you.
Matt?
Okay.
Yeah, Matt.
Just the way that you were saying it made it sound bad to me. I just the way you were saying it, but now I see.
Maybe it's the way you're interpreting it, you sick fuck.
Mm.
You should get the fuck out of here.
Anyway, I'm going to go undo these chains so that you guys can play with.
We hunch forward into a table-mounted headset and squint at a monochrome crimson display as we experience Nintendo's 90s hardware flop Virtual Boy, this week on Get Played.
To Get Played, your one-stop show for good games, bad games, and every game in between. It's time to Get Played! I'm your host, Heather Ann Campbell. I'm here along with my fellow host, Nick Weiger.
That's me, Nick Weiger, along with our third host, Matt Apodaca.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Oh, man, I'm excited about today's show, guys.
Wow.
I'm excited.
What a topic. And partly finally again available to us because we got to see each other IRL yesterday.
I'd say
better part of a day together.
We spent an entire afternoon together, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I welcomed you guys into my home.
Okay.
Christ. We were over at your domicile. We had a nice time, and we recorded another podcast. I think we can say here we'll be on a Scott Hasn't Seen with Sprague the Whisperer talking about the Super Mario Brothers movie. A true baffling piece of shit, but I also every time I watch it, I'm like, maybe this is good. I don't know. It adds, I think I've said on the podcast, I've seen this four times.
Yeah.
And it has some new element each time where I'm like, this is a mess, but this is such a fascinating piece of cinema.
Yeah. If you remember, we did do it on the DLC, but I think we had a different conversation just because we were talking to Sprague and to Scott.
Yes.
I think it's
great to see Sprague in person. It's been too long.
Yeah. Oh, man. So many fun times with Sprague.
I think it's like you go into a room and there's like a pile of very intricately connected garbage. Like somebody has masterfully connected a bunch of garbage together and they say it's a table, but you can't sit at it. And that's like the hardware analogy for what the Super Mario Brothers movie is. You're like, this took a lot of time and there are a lot of pieces involved.
Yes.
It is not recognizable as a film.
No.
Even though I'm being told it is one.
It's yes. technically what it says it is, but it's also not.
It's technically yeah. ain't no game.
Yeah. Yes. It ain't no game. It's a live action thrill ride.
But yeah, the we saw each other in person, and it was because you guys needed to have access to this week's hardware for our very right. special episode.
Yeah, we stopped right. by the hole because we needed to get around there and play what we were talking about.
That's
you
right.
You also when, saw my Death Stranding windows.
We man, saw those that, are fucking sick.
They were so cool. We saw Mary.
Yeah.
Everything.
Mary IRL. In person.
Great.
Maybe we should edit that so I say Mary before the list of like things in my life that you saw.
Things no, that come up that on the fine. Show. We've seen Mary in person before.
Yeah, we have. Yes. I see Mary in person all the time.
You see her every day.
Right. And I don't think when people are over, I'm not like showing off.
This is Mary. My Mary.
I like yeah. It's yeah. not like, oh, look at the, we played this month's We Play You Play on my Sony PVM on the original hardware. Look at that.
Yeah.
It's a very little different tease. Emotion from like have a conversation with my real world fiance.
Yeah. You guys have a different sort of spousal relationship than I do with my wife because I'm always showing her off like a prize pony. Get a load of her, huh? Guys, we have this hardware to discuss. We have this fascinating piece of hardware, also a mess of Nintendo from the 90s that we're going to be talking about, akin to the Super Mario Brothers live action movie. Also a widely regarded as a debacle from that era. But before we get to that, I have to ask the both of you, and I guess myself by proxy, what are you playing?
Oh, wait, is that you or me?
No, that's my landline. Let me pick it up.
Okay.
Hey, hello? Sorry, I'm recording.
What are you playing?
Let's talk about some video games we've been spending some time with.
I mean, shall I go first? Who wants to go?
I can go first because it's the same old.
Yeah, please.
I am two regular canonical bosses away from the end of Elden Ring. Three, if you count a dragon that I have to fight. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting to finish it this next 48 hours. And I don't know that I'm in a new game plus it, at least for a significant time, because I want to go play Stranger of Paradise. I want to play this Vita game that I promised myself I would play this year, like mm-hmm. a Vita game I didn't recognize from my list of Vita games.
Right.
Still loving it. Found a great place to level my character. Beat Millennia.
Wow.
Which was not a fun fight.
Yeah.
Not a fun fight.
I haven't gotten there yet, but widely regarded as the most difficult boss fight in the game, at least from what yeah. I've read.
And like I think across FromSoft games also. Like they're like, this boss wow. is hard.
Wow.
I had flashbacks to the Valkyrie Queen from God of War when I fought her long before I was supposed to.
Right.
Like that's what I also saw a great TikTok of a woman fighting Millennia. And she's like,
was she doing like a dance too?
She's like, she announces, funny. TikTok's more than dances now.
I know. It's like fun recipes and clips of fun things. It's good.
Mine is primarily in Japanese, and it is just people like touring restaurants in Tokyo, and there's no English.
Wow.
It's great. Because the algorithm really is aggressive on that platform. But I saw a TikTok of a woman who's like, finds Millennia. And she's like, Millennia gives her a little speech, which I don't want to spoil because it's kind of great. And she's like, oh, really? Well, I, and then Millennia two shots her immediately. It's like a slow zoom on the woman's face from Twitch. And that's the whole video, I think.
That's so funny.
That rules.
Yeah, I am still love the game, but I am ready to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to move on.
Yeah, I'm. What's your play time at approximately?
Oh man, I don't know.
You're in the mid 100 hours at this point, right? 120 plus.
Am I?
I don't know.
I think I'm like 103 or something. Mm-hmm. Like
103.
That.
Okay, got it.
Like 103 to 105, maybe. I mean, God, what if I'm not? What if it is like 150 hours?
What if it's 135 hours? Like somebody else on the Zoom right now?
Wow.
135.
Yeah.
I'm at half your playtime. So I have so much more to do. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I popped a trophy the other day when I fought in a dungeon, and I was like, wow, I didn't expect to get this trophy, which was all legendary spirit ashes.
Oh, wow. Cool. Look at you.
Yeah.
Well done.
And then I looked up whether or not I could platinum it, because I was like, I fought all the bosses. Maybe I'm pretty close to like platinuming this game. No, I'm locked out of several weapons and can never get them.
I'll say on the Elden Ring front real quick, and I'm sure Matt has some Elden Ring thoughts to contribute as well, because I've still been playing it. I've still been enjoying it. I'm significantly behind the both of you, but I'm going to eventually finish this game. And anytime I get to spend significant time with it, I'm like, this is great. This is delightful. Even the stuff that annoys me, I eventually am just like, it's fine. It's just part of the game. It's part of the experience. But I went and, you know, I'm getting really into the lore, and I'm trying hard. I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm watching portions of videos, and like I listen to a portion of the Ranged Touch podcast, their Patreon episode on this, because, you know, just to get some like deep lore. But like I have to like stop because I'm not far enough in the game to hear get everything spoiled yet. So I'm getting really into like the kind of the story and the lore and the world, and trying to parse it a little bit, but also trying to keep some of it myself, you know, in the dark as far as where this thing is headed. So I picked up the Berserk manga, the first volume of it.
Wow.
I went to a Japanese bookstore and got it. And in the exact same section as me, in the exact same section I was at, looking for the Berserk manga, was just another guy who was just another me. It was just another bearded otaku doing the exact same thing. Like, is that Berserk? Oh, I'm looking for Berserk. If you're using the Elden Ring character creator and you hit show similar faces, that guy would pop up for me. Just like, I wonder how many fucking gamer dorks are going to like, you know, comic book stores and looking at the manga section, be like, do you have Berserk right now? Just because to try to get some more insight into the Elden Ring inspiration.
Can you tell me the name of the Japanese bookstore that you went to, or do you not know?
Let me look it up. It was in the Mitsuya Market, and there's also one in
Kinokuniya.
Yes. There's another one of those in Little Tokyo.
I have subscribed to the Berserk manga through my local comic book store, Secret Headquarters here in Los Angeles, California.
I've shopped there.
I fucking love it there. I don't know how they stay in business. I have no idea how.
I know. I always feel like I'm the only person there.
there's always people there, but it's in a neighborhood where like mom and pop shops are closing down and being replaced with like super high end perfume stores.
Yes.
Or Maison Kitsune, which is like a luxury French brand.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this comic book store that has been open for all of the years that I've lived in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've got some more non-Elden Ring thoughts to get to, but Matt, let's check in with you.
I have an Elden Ring anecdote because you shared the one about getting Berserk. I was at a bar recently, and I was with some friends, and we were just kind of hanging out and talking. I think I told you this off pod, But some guy came over to our table that we didn't know. And he was like, I feel like this is the table I can come sit and talk about Elden Ring with. And I was like, yeah. I was like, that's rude. A rude assumption, but yes. And I just thought that was super funny. And then we talked to this guy for like an hour. I was further along and he was getting his ass kicked. And it felt... And I was like, this must be what it feels like to be Heather, to be good at a game. I'm not good at this game, but compared to this guy, I was doing really well. So I was like, this is what you're supposed to do. Here's how you're supposed to like go about this thing. Like, you can just walk away. I was helping this guy out quite a bit. He was very thankful. And then his friend like dragged him away. Because I think he was a little inebriated.
I had a similar experience at a party. Talking to a friend who the entire party, all we did was talk Elden Ring. But Matt, before we move on, I forgot. We played together.
Yes, I was going to say this as
right.
well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I summoned Heather. I used one of my furled finger remedy things to get Heather into my game, and we were trying to take down a boss, and we were having a little trouble.
This guy
is hard. And the only reason most of the trouble we were having was because I kept dying very soon.
That's not true. There were a few times where I just was like, I'm in a rush, and I ran at him, and he like one or two hit me, and then it was over.
Yeah, well, because he causes bleed, right? So like it was the Blood Lord and causing bleed, and then we did that for like a little while, and that was really fun.
Then I had to go,
and then Heather had to go, and then literally the next two people that I summoned. Melted this guy. And it was but in a way that I was like, I'm glad this happened because this was really frustrating, but it was also in a way like unfun because this boss has two phases and he didn't even get there. We killed him in the first phase, which seems impossible. but that's how good this one player was. And I think they were a fan. I think they were a listener.
Wow.
So if that was you, thanks. I can't remember what your thing was, but thank you.
Was it like DDTD on Twitter or something like that?
Maybe.
I vaguely remember.
I think so. And the thing is, I could find it, but.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry. I'm just not pulling it up. I continue to talk. I continue to speak.
His arms are literally crossed.
My arms are crossed. I'm not doing it. I'm not typing in Twitter. But I'm playing too many games right now.
This is what you do. This is you play too many games, but you also finish games.
Yes.
I don't know how you manage it.
I don't see anybody. my girlfriend sort of just understands that this is what I do. And we spend our time together. But when I have free time, oh, baby, I'm playing those games. I'm still playing Kirby. But like Kirby is not a game that I feel pressure to play. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, oh, good, Kirby's here. I'm trying to relax. I'll do, like, a level of Kirby and put it down.
Same thing for me. It's, like, a great just, like, I got that kind of going on the side. It's on the back burner. It's simmering. Eventually, I'll finish that game. It is delightful.
It's so
charming.
It's so, like, I don't know. It feels great. There's zero challenge to it. And so it makes me feel great, especially after having a frustrating time, like, in Elden Ring or something.
You guys know what Kirby is named after, right?
John Kirby is
John
his
Kirby.
Name, right?
Oh, yeah. That's not what I heard.
The lawyer.
What did you hear?
I heard it was based off of a scene in American History X.
Oh.
that kind of
scene?
Kind of your kind of joke, guys?
Yeah.
Like that kind of ear. Is that the kind of joke you guys like?
I do like it.
I felt like I was trying real hard to do like a you guys joke.
I liked it. Speaking of the difficulty, my buddy Yu Sung Lu, podcaster, he streams on Twitch, but he's been playing Kirby, and his thing that he likes to do is he'll just call a Kirby boss an Elden Ring boss. So he can just be like, I just beat Godric.
Yu Sung.
Yeah.
Yu Sung?
Yep. Very mischievous.
I'm playing that. I got Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker Saga. And that's similarly easy. But it also does. Gene Park was saying this on Twitter that feels like a stealth 100-hour game because it covers all nine of the movies, some of The Mandalorian, some of solo, maybe just character packs, but I think they're going to expand to Rogue One also. And it's a collect-a-thon game. Like, you can, I mean, you get the characters that serve the story, right? But then you can get all the side characters like Newt Gunray and whoever, Babu Frick, all these fuckers.
They're, yeah!
A D.O. I think D.O. is in the game.
I had a dream that there was a new, I know, telling people their dreams sucks. It's the worst thing ever. But I had a dream that there was a new Star Wars movie and it was Mumblecore.
And like an A24, like
all the characters are like mumbling, and I was like, "This is terrible."
I'd see it. I'd see any Star Wars at this point. I don't care. I've resigned to just when they come out, I'll just go.
Yeah.
And I'm also Nick. If I could say this, Nick gifted me his old PC. And
that's right.
Ooh.
Very nice. Very thankful for this. Now I can play it now. I could play any fucking game I want. Nobody's stopping me. I'm a god now. After the police came and tried to seize the computer, I then installed. I installed a bunch of stuff that I've
never. Yeah, you're not supposed to connect it to the internet. Oh, sorry. Make sure you got a VPN going.
It was it was immediately on dark web. the home browser was dark web. But I immediately installed games that I've always wanted to play and never played before, like things like Half-Life that have just never made it to like home console that I probably got on a Steam sale. I was like, someday I'll be able to play this aspirationally. But the first thing that I tried was Inscription. And have you guys messed with Inscription?
No, I have it on my wish list and I'm excited to play it. But I'm just like, when the fuck am I going to get time to play Inscription?
I started it and I'm not very far into it, but it seems good. It seems mm-hmm. like it's very interesting. It seems like there's more going on to it than what it seems like so far. And I'm interested to spend some more time with it. It's like a very like it's kind of spooky sort of tabletop like card game sort of thing.
Yes.
And I like the game, like the card game of it all. And it's a little spooky. But it just also seems like there's other things going on that I can't really speculate about, and I don't want to like accidentally spoil for myself, so I haven't looked, but it seems it's good.
I've heard a lot of vague talk in those regards of just like there's once you get into Inscription, there's more to Inscription than you think,
yeah.
You know, and it's just kind of like it's got a, I don't know if it's a meta element or what, but it definitely is beyond just being if it's a good card game, it's a good card game, but it's beyond being a card game.
Yeah. I'm enjoying that so far, and mm-hmm. you know, I feel like it's a great time for games. Like all the games that I'm playing
great
right now are really good. I feel like I haven't heard of a stinker in a bit, you know, as far as like major releases go. But I'm having fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of things to play. And a new game got announced, and that's what I'm going to touch on real quick, which is Return to Monkey Island. This is a direct sequel to Monkey Island 2. So they've actually made 4 Monkey Island games. Curse of Monkey Island was the third. I actually like that one. Escape from Monkey Island, I didn't think was particularly great. I just think the writing wasn't quite at the same level. And the, you know, it had a really a real bummer of a mini game that you had to play. But this one has Ron Gilbert, who is, you know, Secret of Monkey Island and Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge, those were his games. Ron Gilbert and Dave Grossman also involved from those first two games. They're both back. And so they're kind of Halloweening it. They're just like, you know what? We're getting rid of some of the canon and we're going back in time and we're saying like, okay, we have a new timeline branching off from the second entry.
We're putting Michael Myers in it.
Michael Myers is in it. the famous theme. It is the season of the witch. Look, these are a couple of my favorite games of my youth. When I play a point and click adventure game these days, it's always a little bit like, okay, you know, like it's maybe a genre that's it had its relevance in the past, and now it always kind of feels like a throwback by virtue of just its mechanics. But I hope this is fun. It's got the pedigree to be a good game. Denny Delk, who voiced Murray the Skull, In Curse of Monkey Island is returning, so that should be fun. A great voiceover performance, and I wanted to touch on something real quick because we're going to be talking about hardware here, and there's a YouTube channel, Phil's Computer Lab, that we'll link to in our show description that has a that has compiled what the audio sounded like on different audio hardware. On the PC, back in the days of Secret of Monkey Island. So I got a few different clips here from the same video. So the first one, this is all the main title theme. Matt, if you want to bring this one up, this first one is the PC speaker. So this is what it would sound like with just like the built-in audio of any particular computer back in the day. So this is the PC speaker. All right, great. We kind of get a sense of that. Very honestly, like with one channel, pretty impressive what they were able to do there. But if you go and you upgrade your setup back in the day and you get yourself a sound card, Sound Blaster was the most common. So if we skip ahead a little bit, we'll hear this is what that same theme would sound like on a Sound Blaster.
That's nice.
Yeah. And hey, if you have yourself a Yamaha OPS2 chip and the Sound Blaster 1.5, which is the card that I had back in the day, back in the 90s, this is what it would sound like.
Wow.
Wow.
It's kind of amazing because now, like, basically every PC has the same audio hardware, but there was so much divergence between your setups and that they had to account for that when they were, you know, creating these games and programming them and obviously composing and doing the sound design. Let's hear this last one. This last one is if you had yourself a MIDI card, you had the Roland MT32.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this sounds awesome.
Yeah, this... Wait a second. Give me a freaking Mai Tai, baby.
Anyway, shout out Phil's Computer Lab. Just an awesome, awesome little piece of curation there, putting all those clips together.
Really cool.
Very cool. And Return to Monkey Island. Supposed to be coming this year. They've been in development for a couple years. I'm excited for it. Why not?
Was there a Monkey Island for like the Dreamcast or something?
They ported Escape from Monkey Island to consoles. I'm not sure if it came for Dreamcast. It was on PS2. I actually owned it on PS2.
Okay, maybe that's what I've seen then. Because I remember watching my uncle play a little bit of Monkey Island and being like, where are the dang monkeys?
If it was on hardware, if it was on a console, that was probably the one. And that was like the kind of, I think it used the Grim Fandango engine. It was like, you know, the other ones were point and click, but this one you direct controlled Guybrush Threepwood, the protagonist. And yeah, it was whatever. It was fine. I'm excited for the new one. But hey, any other video game news of the day we want to discuss before we get into our topic?
I don't think so. Not for me.
I got a notification that my play date is going to ship soon.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a brand new gaming experience coming to me in 2022.
Hopefully mine comes shortly after. I have not gotten my email yet, but I'm in the second group.
That's it for my gaming news.
And then we'll have to do an episode on it, and then someone's gonna have to let Nick play theirs.
Yeah. He'll be here in 5 minutes as soon as you tell him you have to crank it.
Jesus Christ.
Am I right? That's like two for
That's
two.
That's good. That's okay. Hey. So Heather, this New Year's resolution's coming along pretty good.
I'm trying to do it.
Well, let's get to this week's topic. We're talking about the Virtual Boy. That's right. It's how do we want to frame this, Heather?
Isn't it?
How do we want to frame this?
Weren't we saying something like this is Heather's Hole presents the Virtual Boy because this is coming from your collection?
Okay, then maybe it should be like, hey guys, welcome to my hole. Today
We're all going to be in my hole playing Virtual Boy.
Jesus.
For those of you who, I don't know, are Matt's age or younger.
Hey, wait a second.
Huh? What does that mean?
I've seen this before.
You may not even really know what the Virtual Boy is. It has been nearly erased from gaming history. This was a fifth generation video game console created by Nintendo R&D 1. So like their main is Nintendo, like Nintendo first party machine. It was released in Japan, July 21st, 1995. Here in North America, August 14th, 1995, really shortly thereafterwards. It was discontinued in 1996. So 6 months.
Wow.
6 months later. And I'm going to tell you, it sold 770,000 machines. The second biggest failure in Nintendo's lineup was the Wii U. And the Wii U sold 13.5 million machines. Wow. Machines that sold more than the Virtual Boy, and here's in reverse order, so going down the list.
Mm-hmm.
The Sega Pico with 3.4 million, Wonder Swan 3.5 million, Color TV Game 3 million, Intellivision, Mega Drive, N-Gage sold 3 million, Sega CD sold 2.2 million. NES Classic Edition, ColecoVision, Magnavox Odyssey, PC Engine CD-ROM, Atari Lynx, Philips CDI. We've covered that on the show before. That's the one with Mario's like fucking hotel or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
Hotel Mario, yeah.
Yeah.
Telstar. Might as well have been called Mario's fucking hotel or whatever.
the Telstar from 1976 sold more than the Virtual Boy. The Atari 5200, famously the machine that collapsed the gaming industry, and the Atari 7800 all sold more than the Virtual Boy. Like, this was an unparalleled, at its time, an unparalleled failure.
Yeah, absolute disaster.
Like, coming from Game Boy and squandering the, like, legacy of the brand. Like, the DS wasn't called the Dual Boy.
Right.
You know, the 3DS wasn't called 3D Boy. Virtual Boy killed the name.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's because you're talking about Nintendo R&D 1, which developed the Game Boy. Game Boy, an unbelievable hit, and also basically like established handheld gaming as a thing. Establish that as a new sector of console gaming, and that, you know, the, of course, the Game Boy Color as well, very successful. And then Gunpei Yokoi, who created this, created the Game Boy, and then also goes on to create the Virtual Boy. Like, this was like the end of his run at the company. And then, unfortunately, the, you know, he ended up dying very, very young in a traffic accident shortly. Oof. In not too long after the Virtual Boy completely flopped and he left the company. So it's a esteemed career, did an incredible innovator. But the Virtual Boy was, I don't know. It's interesting because, Matt, you mentioned liking it. And yeah. I kind of had the same reaction, but I think you have to view it through the prism of, do we talk about how much this retailed for, Heather?
$179.
Which is like, you know, $300 in today's money. So it's like the price of an Oculus Quest.
Yeah.
So imagine you bought you spent as much as you spent on an Oculus Quest in the 90s. Imagine you're a kid and this was your big Christmas present.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing I want, the Virtual Boy, and this is what you get, this thing that is a cool tech demo maybe, but it's really not playable for anything more than a few minutes at a time.
Yeah, I think what I was responding to when I was liking it was, well, we were playing together as friends. That was nice. But also, it's not mine. And I didn't buy it.
Right. Yeah.
Well, if you haven't seen the Virtual Boy before, the machine we are describing is a tabletop video game experience. So the Game Boy is something you brought out on the go in the back of a car. The Virtual Boy, you had to be sitting at a table. The instruction manual shows you the proper position to be sitting in. It looks like a War of the Worlds style walker. There are two thin, spindly legs that stand on your table, and then a red and black headset that you cannot strap to your head. You have to hunch over, you have to lean your body into the machine so much so that your whole eyesight is blocked by this red and black three-dimensional screen. You cannot see the controller. You cannot see your surroundings. It is a baffling experience. The fact that enough people in a room said, yes, we're gonna ship this. Nick, you played it for 7 minutes, yes. Sat up and said, I feel like I'm gonna throw up.
That's right.
And that was That was the experience of tons and tons of kids, and some people had seizures after playing the Virtual Boy.
Yeah. And to be fair, Nick kept saying he was going to throw up like all day yesterday. It was really crazy.
And he said it like this. I'm going to throw up.
Somebody hold my hair.
It's interesting that you talk about the hunch that's required, because, you know, you had preserved a few manuals for this. And so I was looking through the manual and I took some photos of the diagrams and the text in this. And there's a diagram of a person. There's a drawing of a guy playing playing the Virtual Boy in the proper way. And it looks so unergonomic. He's completely hunched forward. Like, he's leaning all the way forward because this thing has a stand that does not go, unless you prop it up on books. And we propped it up on like 6 volumes of hardcover books, and it still wasn't high enough for me to like fit my head into without hunching over.
And
it would not be inappropriate to say like that an instruction in the manual could be, turn your body into the shape of the letter C. Like,
and Nick, you're sort of burying the lead on this diagram. The model looks like you.
It also looks like me, yeah. Another similar face from the Elden Ring character creator. Look, I'm a generic looking guy.
The machine gets warm on your face.
Mm-hmm. Very hot.
The sound, it comes out of like speakers embedded in the headset, but you can hook up headphones to it. And it is also possible to run it off batteries. So I guess the theory was, hey, if somebody wanted to bring this out to a picnic, we shouldn't prevent them. So you could blast through batteries, like just chug through them on the scale of a Game Gear, like as fast as possible, in order to play the Virtual Boy out in public. Like, I've played my Switch at a bar. Can you imagine like loading up the Virtual Boy?
Just, it took like, I mean, yesterday when you were setting it up, it took several minutes. And like, and not only that, lots of space. Like, you pulled it out of this carrying case and had to, you know, finagle the legs and stuff and like figure out where the power thing went. And it's such a cumbersome experience overall. I can't imagine even being seen doing it.
it's also fragile.
Yeah.
Like, it's top heavy in like a not you. We talked about Super Mario Brothers, the movie, being a series of baffling choices. This is akin to that, but from Nintendo itself.
I have a thought about where you're supposed to put your arms and how it relates to the top heaviness. So, like, you're supposed to put your arms beyond the Virtual Boy and hold the controller behind it. I'm sort of thinking that's in case if you knock it over, then your arms can sort of catch it and it won't, like, shatter on the table.
It's like that in and of itself is, like, clunky, like, holding it like that because you've got, you know, it's the hardware is wired and you've got a wired controller that you're using. And so you have to, like, kind of route the wire between the stand, between the War of the Worlds style spider legs in order to hold the controller. I will say that the controller itself, I kind of like.
Oh, yeah.
And
the controller's good.
I think It's comfortable. That's the most ergonomic part of the whole setup, because it's got these long handles, which, you know, this might be the kind of thing, and it's got dual triggers. Whatever, the Super Nintendo also had you know, shoulder buttons, so it's not like it innovated that, but it does kind of feel the most like a modern controller of any you know, video game controller from the 90s that's not just a straight up DualShock.
Yeah, it's you have to imagine that they built the controller so that you knew where everything was, even if you couldn't see it. So right. I'm guessing they tested it either in pitch darkness or blindfolded, because you have to like, the grips are so substantial on the controller that it's like holding two pistols in your hands.
Right.
Right. So that you always know where your fingers are supposed to be. There's also, like, it's, you know, the baffling double D-pads on both sides of the controller. And then also matching A and B buttons on both sides of the controller.
Right.
So your hands are essentially mirrored. Like, D-pad on both thumbs, two buttons on the interior of the controller next to the D-pad, and then your triggers underneath the controller. And if you put battery, also the power runs through the controller. So
yeah, that seems crazy to me.
So if you are playing with batteries, the controller becomes unbearably heavy.
Yeah. And I can, like, how many, it must take like 8 batteries. Like, I don't know how it could power that fucking thing.
I don't even know. Oh, man.
Yeah. I had a friend with an Atari Lynx, and that burned through like 8 double A's in like 70 minutes. So I have to think that was like, this was a similar, just, you know, just completely. I don't know what kind of batteries it took, but I can't imagine the battery life was very long.
I'm so glad things like that don't really run on batteries anymore. Xbox controllers still have like a battery pack, like you could put batteries in it. But I remember being a kid, and like the most excited I would be is like when my mom would come home from Costco with like a Costco like pack of like 40 batteries, and we'd just be like, "Yes, we'll never have to like change them from the remote or something else that required a battery. Take it out of the clock or some shit."
So it's 6 double A's. I just looked it up. 6 wow. double A batteries.
A pack of batteries.
And I don't know how long that lasted, but I can't imagine it lasted very long. Yeah. Also we noticed, you know, because we looked at the machine a bit. There is an exterior, an extension port on the underside of the system, right? And this was going to be used to output video to a television or to link two Virtual Boys together. The cable was never released because the multiplayer features for Waterworld and Faceball were canceled, and no other games ever came out that required two people.
And
not even Mario Tennis. Yeah. Wow.
And this thing also was only available for sale for 6 months. Like, they couldn't have put this out fast enough.
Well, I'd like to amend that, because it was Nintendo worked on supporting the Virtual Boy through the third quarter of 96.
Okay.
So a year and a couple months. Really.
Even still, like, that's what a shelf life.
Yeah. We should, I think by far from a hardware perspective, the thing that's most off-putting in modern terms is that you can't wear it on your head. Like, everything we know of as a VR headset is like something that you like have like kind of as a helmet or a visor, and that this has to be mounted on a table.
Yeah.
Well, so
you think that's
cumbersome.
More off-putting than that the color is red and black?
Well, okay,
like, there's gradient.
No, that is like, from, if we're talking about playing the games, then yes. So, and we should get into the experience of actually playing these things, because it is very, it is kind of repulsive to look at once you actually get in there. It's cool, but it also looks like complete shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I was like excited to play this thing, and then I got my hands on it in the 90s, and then actually, wait, I definitely played this back in the day. I can't remember if my friend rented it rented one from Blockbuster, or if I just played one at a Blockbuster or at like an electronics boutique. But I definitely messed around with one back in the day.
Putting your face in one at a communal store.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
My carrying case is a Blockbuster carrying case because they remain the only nice way to store or transport a Virtual Boy. And still has like the Blockbuster sticker on the underside, and also the abbreviated instructions where they take this many page manual and like condense it into like three paragraphs. They're like, okay, so first you snap the fucking thing into the legs, then you got to plug the power into the. But yeah, we played a bunch of games. Also,
we did.
We sure did.
We played a bunch of games from your collection, and amazing that you have all of these. Amazing that you have
my hole.
Yes, yes, from your hole. You have a mint version of Waterworld for Virtual Boy. I think there's probably two of those in existence. One is in a museum.
It still has the price tag of $9.99 on it. Also. Because I bought it, you know, like by the time I was like scrapping together cash to get a Virtual Boy, mm-hmm. everything was on super budget. And I was like, oh man, they've discontinued this. I have to get it. Cause like nobody's going to have this in the future. And,
what incredible foresight. Amazing.
What? I mean, was it?
I think so.
But yeah, so the games we played were Waterworld, which now retails for like $900.
Unbelievable.
I guess not retailed, is that resells?
Yeah.
We played the game Waterworld, Wario Land, Mario's Tennis, Golf, and Teleroboxer were our games.
Yes.
What order would you like to tackle these in, boys?
I think we should start with tennis because that's maybe the most approachable of these. And I think that was also the pack-in game.
Yes, that was the pack-in game.
So this is the one you get with every Virtual Boy, the showpiece for the hardware. It's okay. I mean, this is the thing while you're playing it is it's just like this is every tennis game. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, I could play obviously Virtua Tennis on the Dreamcast is maybe the gold standard, but you know, to compare it to like another Super Nintendo era tennis game or just like a regular Mario Tennis played on a console, it's like this is the same thing except we've got this 3D effect where, you know, my opponent is in the background and I'm in the foreground and it's all red and black and it gives me a headache.
But this game is significant in Nintendo history. Do you know why, boys? Can I call you boys?
Yeah.
I'd prefer not, but okay.
Well, I'll tell you why. Mario's Tennis was the first Mario's Tennis game. Mario's Tennis for Virtual Boy was the first Mario Tennis. And according to Wikipedia, multiple articles cited here, has been credited as being the game that started up the sports-related subseries of Mario video games.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. That this is the first. And similarly, you were telling us there's a same sort of thing regarding the Wario Land game that we played. That also was kind of the progenitor of the whole Wario Land series of platformers.
Yes. I'm almost positive, but I can't. I don't know. I don't have that statistic. I read somewhere that Wario Land was the first mainline Wario platforming game. But who knows?
Because Wario originally appears in one of the Super Mario Land games.
Yeah.
But this is like his first, like, this is the one where Wario is the player character.
Oh, no. Wario Land Super Mario Land 3 was before Wario Land on Virtual Boy.
Oh, okay.
You're right.
Got it. Okay.
Oh, well. That would have been nice. But the tennis thing is still crazy.
Yeah. And also I think the tennis game is, I mean, hey, it's fine. It's just like, why would I play this? Why do I need a VR headset to play this? Why do I need a prototype rather of a VR headset to play this? Cause the effect is cool. You know, it does actually look 3D and aesthetically, it's cool in a kind of a throwback sort of sense, and in sort of like this is like a retro sort of console. But if you played it at the time, you'd be kind of like, why does this look like shit?
It came out after PlayStation. Like, right. The PlayStation was already out, and people were like, I guess I'll subject myself to these red and black graphics inside of this headset that I have to hunch over to play.
Well, because you're also using, these are sprites that you're seeing in 3D planes. Like, it's not like this is like a, you know, these are polygons. So it's a different sort of 3D than you would be getting from your, the 32-bit era hardware.
I guess, when I was playing it, I was, because now, like, obviously, we're looking at this through the lens of hindsight and, like, what things look like now. So I was, like, weirdly, I was, like, a little impressed with it, like, how it looked, honestly, because, like, I thought the screen was going to be shittier. Obviously, it's all red and black, so it's, like, not that great. But, like, otherwise, it looks pretty good. Like, just clarity-wise, it was very clear.
No, yes, very clear.
And the depth of the 3D was really good. This was the game that I remember playing on a Virtual Boy when I played it when I was a kid. And the thing that I guess I'll say about it is that, I mean, I guess with all these too, none of the games that we played give you a reason to play it for more than 5 minutes. Like, there's like that, there's nothing in it that's like that hooks you in like a good Game Boy game even or something, you know?
Well, that's
sure.
For the best.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, because that brings me to the manual, which tells you, this is from the manual for Waterworld. But I imagine this was a warning in all of the manuals. All Virtual Boy game packs contain an automatic pause function that will cause the game to pause after about 15 minutes of gameplay. When the game pauses, take a break and give your eyes some rest to resume gameplay at the start. So 15-minute sessions are all this is attended to as an absolute maximum.
Yeah. And then they're like, go, like, look at something else for a little while.
Yeah.
Like, this is
going to off of your face.
Damage your eyes if you play it yes, for 30 minutes in a row.
It gives you a headache.
Yeah.
It does. It really does. It's got to be a combination of the ergonomics and then also just like, you know, the crudity of the display despite its clarity. So, you know, there are all sorts of adjustments you have to make to set this up. The first thing you have to do is the IPD adjustment, which is your interpupil distance. This is also from the manual. And there's a dial here, which you set to, which is supposed to like, let's see. Okay. The best adjustment may, this is how difficult it is to try to get this thing looking right.
Oh, and also imagine you're 7, because that's like the, yes, the minimum recommended age for the Virtual Boy is like 7 and up. So you're 7 years old and your mom says to you, hey, do you want to know how to set your IPD or your interpupil distance? Here's the instructions.
While looking at the adjustment screen, turn the IPD dial located on top of the Virtual Boy until you can dial. You can see a mark in all four corners of the screen, as shown on the screen of the right. So it's like a standard sort of, you know, corners of the screen, corners of the display have little marks in them. The best adjustment may allow you to see only 3 marks or 4 slightly blurred marks. So it doesn't even give you clarity
of what it's supposed,
what you're supposed to be seeing. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Fucking whatever. 3, maybe 4. And then after that, you have to adjust the focus, which I just found, like, for me, it looked best with just maximizing the sharpness, just putting it all the way to the edge and making it, you know, that made it as defuzzy as possible. But it still is just kind of it's not ideal to look at for long stretches.
Yeah,
I have I want to read a little bit of the development of Mario's Tennis, just from Wikipedia, real quick. But I didn't want to interrupt you, Matt. What were you about to say?
Nothing.
Okay.
Great.
So, from Wikipedia, the game initially had a working title of Mario's Dream Tennis upon its announcement. The game was developed by Nintendo R&D 1 with director Gunpei Yokoi. Yokoi? Yeah, sure, why not? The same team that was responsible for the development of the Virtual Boy itself. His success with the Game Boy line of systems, coupled with the public's general belief that it was too early for the next generation of systems due to the failure of systems such as the 3DO and the Atari Jaguar, led the team to brainstorm on different approaches that could be taken. The team came up with a system that used 3D images to display conventional 2D graphics, the Virtual Boy being the result at the hardware end, and Mario's Tennis and Mario's Clash, the end results on the software end. So this was like, this was success. Mario's yeah. Tennis was like, that was like, it was like, guys, let's give ourselves a round of applause and go out for drinks.
It should have stayed. I mean, this is the thing. That just should not have been commercially released because it is an impressive piece of hardware, but it kind of should have just stayed buried and, you know, and they recognize that maybe that just that consumers are not going to like this in its form. And maybe eventually this is like an expansion for the Nintendo 64 or something. You can buy a little VR headset that you're going to plug into it that could play some games in a, you know, in a virtual sense. I mean, that maybe would have been the way to so that it wouldn't be such a resounding commercial failure. That said, I'm glad it exists and I'm glad we get to mess around with it because playing Wario, so it's a decent platformer. I was playing it. I was like, I wish that this was available on. I was
any
thinking
other
like
system.
Hey, on any other system. Yeah, like I was thinking like, hey, if Nintendo ever and they would never ever do this because they're just so protective of the library. But if they were like, hey, for archival purposes, we're gonna have a Virtual Boy app in the Oculus store. And you can just play all the Virtual Boy games on an Oculus just to see what that was like, because it's an important piece of gaming history. Obviously not ever going to happen. Matt, I think you brought up that if this was on the 3DS,
yeah,
that would
Heather
be like
said
a great,
it, yeah, but yeah.
Or Heather said that, yeah. So like 3DS, like if I would love to play this Wario game on the 3DS, can't really play it for long stretches here, but it's got some cool things. Like it's got like, you know, two different planes, which we'd see on the Donkey Kong franchise where you got like a foreground and a background and, you know, Wario can jump to the background and do some platforming there and then jump back to the foreground. And that looks cool in the 3D of it all. It's just like there's no reason to be playing a platform game with a VR headset.
No.
Particularly one this uncomfortable.
And I noticed I had not played a Wario platforming game before. And I noticed that, like, because, you know, Mario, when he gets hit and he turns from Big Mario to Little Mario, I guess Mario yes. normal and then Little Mario, but he still keeps his hat. I guess sometimes he loses his hat, right? But
that's a disaster if he loses his
if
hat.
If the hat's off,
happens
he's
in
fucking
Super Mario
dead.
64. He's like, fuck yeah, he's like, fuck, I need my hat.
Yeah, give me some health. But when Wario gets hit, he loses his hat and gets smaller, and he's also like bald. Like they make him look like Wario is already unpleasant to look at, but they're like, no, he gets like a little uglier too. Like they make him look kind of nasty.
I love it. I love what a freak he is.
I'd like to play a little selection from the music in this game, which I think I've used in a DLC episode previously. But it's Wario. So the game, like you're sitting at your table, head crammed into this hot headset, playing as the least charismatic and least attractive Nintendo mascot. And you also are subjected to sounds which, Matt, you described at the time as like farting.
Yeah. I was like, oh, you know, they can't even give Wario good music. They gave him farting.
Yeah. So let's hear a little bit of that music.
See, I dig this.
Devin's got his hands in the air, and you won't believe what he's doing them. He's waving them like he just don't care.
Wow.
Murder.
It's kind
of... No, this is rad.
We were
it's
saying
kind of perfectly Wario.
The sound chip for the Virtual Boy is kind of good. It's a little
I don't
farty.
Know, man, like,
I kind of like it.
Like, but like, this doesn't like... encourage you to move forward in a game world. It's kind of like, what if you just like sat and watched your character go through like idle animations.
It's so the hardware itself, and then the you know, the display, it being all red and black and difficult to focus your eyes while looking at, it's aggressively ugly. And then you've got a character who's ugly, and then a soundtrack that's kind of leaning into that as well. So it is just like an overall off-putting experience. I definitely get that.
That being said, many retrospectives on Wario Land have called it the best Virtual Boy game.
Wow.
So this is it. Like, it doesn't get, there's no hidden gem that I didn't subject you guys to. Like, this is the height of heights for the Virtual Boy library.
It felt like a solid platformer, you know.
It was fun to play.
I like platform games. It was fun to play, and he animates well, and he's got a fun. Wario's got a little fun mood set. It's his little shoulder charge.
Some fun inventive level design. Like, it's good. Like, yeah. To Nick's point, if it was on something else, I'd probably try to play through it. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Up next. Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, I was just gonna tee up Waterworld.
Well, I was gonna say. Go ahead.
No, I want to hear. Go for it.
You go.
Can I say something?
Up.
Yeah. Matt, go ahead, Matt.
Go ahead, Matt.
I wanted to just talk about Waterworld too, unless...
played Waterworld next.
I was going to cue it up as the game we played next received negative reviews, and the version released for Virtual Boy is generally considered to be the worst game in its 22-game library. Guys, we played... We played 5 games? We played almost 25% of the Game Boy library?
I guess
is that
so,
right?
Yeah.
I didn't actually get around to playing... I didn't play any golf.
I didn't play the golf
I played 4 of them.
Yeah, because I think you guys started to feel sick.
Yeah.
We did. We got queasy.
We were both like, I gotta go.
And then we want to see your Death Stranding windows.
Yeah. Nick tried to jump out.
Yeah. It's a shame you guys didn't see golf because it has photorealistic graphics compared to the other ones, like a digitized man standing in 3D in Virtual Boy Golf, and
cool.
The very misleading box art that seems to imply you'll be playing the game in first person perspective in a virtual world.
Yeah, these legs are horrifying.
Yeah, which would make sense.
But we play Virtual Boy Waterworld.
Yes.
The most expensive game in my Virtual Boy collection, and a colossal failure. I think this game may have been released after. No, it wasn't. I vaguely remember it coming out after the Virtual Boy had been announced discontinued, but that's not true. Like, that might have been when I became aware of it. So you go ahead. Go.
We played the Super Nintendo version in our old format.
Yep.
And I can't remember how we felt about it, but I remember it being like, it's like a game. And, you know, they're platforming levels, they're like action combat platforming levels. And then there are also the levels where you are running around on the, what the fuck is the thing you're riding?
Trimaran.
The trimaran. You're going around the trimaran defending the atolls so you can rescue the atollers from the, who are the fucking bad guys?
Smokers.
The smokers. Okay. So you're shooting the smokers and rescuing the atollers. And I don't know if you, because I couldn't progress past the first level. And this one made me the sickest of any of these games.
Yes.
Made me the most nauseated because you have to pivot your perspective, and you're doing this with the D-pad. You're not doing this with your, so you're changing your, you know, how your field of vision, you're shifting your field of vision in this headset with the controller as you're trying to steer your trimaran around to rescue these drowning civilians and shoot your trimaran gun at these smokers. And I don't know if that's all there is to the game, or there's also platforming levels as you progress, but this level, I was just like, this fucking sucks. This is a horrible game. This is so not fun.
So this was developed by Ocean of America, Ocean Games. and was also the only other game they were in charge of in the Waterworld lineage was the Saturn Waterworld game, which was canceled before release.
So this team, this is the one that they released, is the Virtual Boy Waterworld. This is I've worked on some awful games from as a developer. A lot of times these things are pretty out of your hands. You know what you're making. You have unreasonable demands from a publisher, and you have a schedule that's impossible and a team that's not big enough and a budget that's not big enough. At least that's what I tell myself. So I can sleep at night. So who knows what circumstances they were under to try to put this licensed game together as quickly as possible on new untested hardware that no one had figured out. No one ever figured out how to use properly. So, you know, it's amazing that they even got a game together. But that said, if you die in this game, it rolls the credits, which to me, they knew at some level. Okay, people are going to play this once. So let's make sure they at least see our names after they die and then throw their headset in the trash.
The final game we actually played, because I forgot that you guys didn't play golf, we just had it on the table, was Tellero Boxer. Yes, which is a game
this is the one I remember.
Yeah, recently purchased. From a used game shop in Portland that I've mentioned on the show before during a road trip. I was like, oh shit, it's Tellero Boxer. And it doesn't cost $400. I'll pick it up. Tellero Boxer, also by the Nintendo First Party development team, is a game where you play as a virtual first-person boxer against robots. When a technology called telerobotics is created, which allows people to control robots to do tasks not normally doable by humans. A lot of people say it's a great game. What do you guys think?
This was my favorite of the bunch. This is the one I remember messing around with back in the day. And it's, you know, it's like Punch Out. And this was also the one that feels the most justified in terms of the hardware, I think, because of its first person perspective. It's kind of like, OK, I see my boxing fists and I can it has the closest one to one in terms of movement. You're not gesturing. You're using a D-pad. But in terms of like, OK, this D-pad moves my hand up. This D-pad, you know, this D-pad moves my left hand up. This D-pad moves my right hand up. I can move these independently or together. I can throw a punch with this button and a right with this button and a left with this button. I never really figured out how to control the height of my punches. And apparently you can throw uppercuts or whatever. I didn't figure out how to do that. But like just from a simple sort of, you know, stick and move, again, akin to the Punch Out series, which I'm sure it was inspired by it, and modeled after, it was like, oh, this is a very playable boxing game. I beat the first opponent. I got to the second opponent. The second opponent has a second form where if you do enough damage to him, his head, they're robots. So his head like lowers down to like his crotch area. And so you have to like, I guess, hit him with low blows in order to do damage.
Is that where you got the idea?
All right. So I was like trying to figure out like I don't know how to throw a low punch, so I couldn't do damage to him, and eventually he beat me. But it's great because they're humans in the lore. They're humans controlling these robots. They're human pilots. I don't know if they're mechas or if they're like using a controller to control them. But the guy after I lost the second opponent, he taunted me, and the taunt he used was, "You're pathetic and weak."
Being 7 years old and reading that and like bursting into
really
tears.
To the core.
Yeah, like sitting up at your own dining room table and being like,
I just got bullied by my game. I like this one quite a bit too. A lot of modern games have tutorials or like tutorial levels. None of these games, and as far as I know, walk you through what you're supposed to be doing or how to do it. It's just like, okay, strap in, you're doing this now, and it's a jarring experience. I don't know how they expected anyone, let alone a kid, to be able to put any of this together. It's a shocking mess.
This was the RTFM days. Mm-hmm. Read the freaking manual. Oh. And so they would have, like, you know, these I assume if you read the Teller O'Boxer manual, mm-hmm. it explained all these mechanics.
You learned the uppercut.
To you, but yeah. Yeah. But the other thing is that kids didn't read the fucking manual. Nah. So I remember the first time I played Legend of Zelda on NES, I hadn't read any of the manual. I had no idea what the fuck was going on. Because it's like I'd only played like linear games up to that point. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, where do I go? What do I do? And then I got to like a fairy fountain. I was like, did I beat the level? Like I had no understanding right. of how it worked until my brother played it and showed me how it actually was structured.
I wonder. There's a Tetris game for Virtual Boy, which wow. received universally negative reviews. And instead of playing on a two-dimensional platform or map play space mm-hmm. where the puzzles are falling towards the bottom of the screen, they're falling into a cube. And
oh.
of the remaining Virtual Boy games that we didn't get a chance to play, I wonder if that one is any good or if it is upsetting.
The game is called V-Tetris. I've got a long play video here.
That's a different game.
That's a different game?
Yeah. It's 3D Tetris.
Okay, hold on. Let me find 3D Tetris.
V-Tetris was only released in Japan. 3D Tetris was released here.
Oh, this looks bad. Like, this looks like a nightmare.
Okay, here we go. Here's a long play of 3D Tetris.
Oh, my God.
This is really difficult to tell what's going on with this perspective, which I assume you can control. But yeah, you're looking down at the game. It's like you're staring down a chimney that you're playing Tetris down. And so you're navigating the pieces that way, the 3D pieces in a top-down manner, or a pseudo-top-down manner, kind of isometric. It's really difficult to tell where you're supposed to place things as
this
a result. So I can
horrible.
See why this would suck. Yeah, this looks... It's awful.
I'm going to throw up. I fucking hate it.
Imagine looking at this with an 11-pound headset strapped to you.
Tetris is like the easiest
this is your
game
entire
to not
field of vision.
Fuck up. Like, it's perfect. You don't have to reinvent the wheel here, babe.
3D Tetris was also the final Virtual Boy game released in March of 1996.
Do you think they saw it and they were like, oops.
What are we doing?
Never mind, let's shut this down.
There's a Gundam game that was only released in Japan that makes me want to, like, I want to know if, one, I don't know anything about cross-compatible, like, were they region-locking the Virtual Boy, or when it was launched, were they like, look, if somebody wants to import a fucking game from somewhere else, let them do it.
Great question.
But there's a Gundam game that also has terrible reviews, but I'd love to play that, see if that's any good. I love Gundam. Today is the beta test of Gundam Evolution, the PC Overwatch-style Gundam video game.
Wow.
Wow.
As of this record today. Not today when this comes out.
I think people get it.
Guys, we didn't play golf. Nintendo Power called it the third best Virtual Boy game released in 1995. It is a golf game.
That's it.
I thought the 3D effects on golf are pretty good. But the truth is, I think the 3D effects on all these games are pretty good.
They're not bad.
It's just if it was in color or even just in white and black.
That would make a huge difference, honestly. Just the red is so aggressive.
The red really feels dystopian. Like, yes. Like hunched over into this headset and then being like blasted with red is just like not an experience any child ever wanted. I can't believe they released this machine.
Yeah, it feels like a punishment, the whole thing. The whole thing feels like you're in trouble. Man, what a... But at the same time, I think it was just because of the experience of doing it, but I did have fun playing it.
Yeah, I wish that it just made me, you know, again, I said this earlier, but I just wish that more of this gaming history was more available for people to experience because, yeah, you can watch videos of people playing it, but this really is one where, hey, you want to see it, play it in VR and see what it's actually like. And it would be nice if there were, if libraries or museums had virtual boys that you could go and mess around with if you ever wanted to see what it was like on retro hardware.
But that's a little bit like saying, I wish you could drive a Model T. Like,
I wish I could.
The virtual.
I do wish I, yeah, I agree with that.
Put some water in the back of that thing.
I was saying when you guys were playing it that it felt like a Victorian era toy. Like, it felt like the new 3D video scope.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's got like slide cards and punch graphics, and you're watching this. Like, really confounding
machine. It uses,
machine.
Like, radiation technology to power it somehow. You put it on your head.
Also, it's frustrating, as all VR experiences, I guess we wouldn't call this even though they want us to call it a VR experience, it's not a virtual reality experience.
No.
But you can't see what the other person is doing. So, like, even if you have a virtual boy and you got your buddies over, it is an unenjoyable experience for you as like a host.
Yeah.
Because you're just looking at a friend going, oh yeah, I see now. Okay, yeah. And they're doing it loud because the speakers are right there.
Yeah. Yelling over the farting music. That was the funny thing yesterday when we were playing is that like, while I was playing it anyway, I was sort of like, I feel like I should narrate what's going on, even though it's not helpful to anybody.
But that's, I mean, like, you know, hey, if you got like an Oculus or a Valve Index, I mean, can you mirror that screen somewhere? Can someone else be looking at? You can do that
in the Oculus app. You can mirror it to the app. You have to have it on a phone or something, or if you can cast it to the TV, you can. But
The Index is the same way.
Yeah.
You can see what the other person is doing, which is unsettling, but. At least you're able to be like, oh, look back at that fish.
Yeah. Stop trying to jack off that robot. Yeah.
What?
Oh, that's when we were hanging out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay. Great.
It is interesting, though, that like, you know, the external speakers, which seem like, oh, this is kind of a crude way to handle it. But the Oculus has the same thing. The Oculus comes by default with it's got external speakers that are blasting into your ears by default. You can plug headphones into it, which I did, but it's that was the same design.
Not as heavy. Well, still heavy.
Not nearly as heavy.
Yeah, but you know, not as
and
bad.
Also like works, which is a big thing.
Yeah, and doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Well, I guess thank you guys for hanging out in my hole.
Christ. Thank you, Heather.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That was a blast.
Mary saw the t-shirts now available in our new store that say Heather's Hole, and she was like, oh my God, no.
Podswag.com/play, get your Heather's Hole. And some new items coming soon that aren't there yet, but yes.
Yeah.
There's some new merch on the way. You asked me if I wanted any of it, and the only thing I wanted was a Heather's Hole tank top.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm excited to wear it around town.
And we're getting we have one there that is a ladies fit. We're getting a male fit one. There's plenty of stuff coming. There's a bucket hat coming, all sorts of crazy stuff. So be on the lookout.
Wow. Look for that. That was Heather's Hole Presents Virtual Boy, and now it's time for the question block.
All right, this one's from @MalonesCones on Twitter, and they write, what is the first game you replayed because you loved it so much? For me, since you asked, it was Shining Force for the Sega Genesis. That's
Wait,
it.
What was
replayed?
Yeah, it was the first game you replayed because you loved it so much.
Final Fantasy I on NES was, I think, the first game that I was like, I finished it, and I was like, I'm going to play this again. If we're not talking about like the second quest of something, because like there's like a second quest of Zelda 1 that kind of remixes the levels that I played through. But after Final Fantasy 1, after I finished that, I was like, I want to play through this again with a different party. And that was a thing I actually did a bunch of times, play through it with like, you know, see if I get through it with four black belts or whatever, or four white mages. Four fighters is OP, honestly. you do that, you're set. Well, but yeah, it's playing with different party composition.
Let's see. I feel like I played Out of This World again. I played Demon Souls again. I played The Last of Us Part 1 again. Obviously Super Mario 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back
is
when?
Is that the first? Because I think the question was, what's the first game, right?
Yeah.
What the fuck am I supposed to know? Like, what do you expect me to be?
Well, I'd say Sonic the Hedgehog 1. It's not The Last of Us Part 1, you can say.
Okay. Sonic the Hedgehog 1, for sure. First game I replayed after beating. For sure. That's it. It has to be.
For me,
Which Kingdom Hearts was it?
It was Kingdom Hearts 2. it was probably Spider-Man for the PS1, honestly.
Like, oh, sure.
Because my brother and I loved that game so much that we would just, like, go through it again, and then, like, you can unlock different costumes and stuff, and you're like, oh, I'm going to be, Baghead Spider-Man in this playthrough, and go through it like that, or however you want, you know? Pretty fun.
Wow, great question.
Yeah, great question.
Excellent.
This next one is from @JokeRedacted on Twitter, and they write, do you have any cooldown strategies for difficult games? For example, I turn off the audio in Elden Ring or other Souls games if I'm struggling to get past a difficult boss.
Ooh,
That's a great
tactic for Elden Ring, because the music is part of what makes the boss difficult.
Yes.
I love that tactic. I agree with it.
It's like lowering the volume when you're trying to park in a difficult spot. It like helps a little bit if you turn the radio down a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like when I need to really focus, I'll turn the volume down on a video game. That's excellent. But is that a cooldown? Was the question cooldown?
Yeah. Do you have any cooldown strategies?
Like post game?
No. I think that the way the question is using it, the way the questioner is using it, is in terms of like, okay, I'm getting on tilt here. I'm getting overheated. How do I simmer down a little bit? How do I calm myself down so that I can focus on this task? That was my interpretation of it. I'll say the thing that's worked for me, and you know, hey, Elden Ring is what's on the brain for everybody right now. But like, I just do something else. It's there's that gamer feeling, which you'll encounter sometimes, of just like, I'm struggling with this thing. I'm going to stop it. I'm going to go do something else. And then when I come back to it, for whatever reason, everything is kind of like locked into place in my subconscious, and I just beat it the first try. I've had that happen a number of times. I actually haven't had it happen with Elden Ring yet, but I've had that happen with a number of games over the years where I've like gone to bed and woken up in the morning and been like, okay, time to get back to this thing. And then I'm able to progress past this thing that was this massive roadblock earlier. So I think the most effective cooldown strategy for me is just do something else, whether that's in the game, whether that's in, you know, like in Elden Ring, hey, I'm going to go do something else open world style, or whether that's in IRL, even better, hey, I'm going to walk away from this game and go take a walk and have a snack or whatever.
That's great. I'll tend to do something else. I'll sometimes put on a game, something like Kirby, or like just like something that I know that I can do. A lot of times, I'll honestly just like boot up Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, the remake now, and I'll just crush the warehouse level because I know I can do that. And I just like sometimes will like speed run that level because it's just like a comfort. That's a comfort game to me. I'll just like do like end on a good note. Like, oh, I did that. Now I can maybe stop for the day and then pick it up the difficult boss another time.
Right.
This next one is from Brandon Gilbreck on Twitter. And they write, I've got an enormous backlog and I don't know how to choose my next game to play. What is your process to pick your next playthrough? I think that was an interesting question.
I wish I knew, Brandon. I wish I had a great method. I wish I had here's what I'll say. And I'm going to talk about this in terms of Disco Elysium, which I know we've probably belabored on this podcast, talked about too much, although it is a terrific game. That was one where since it came out, I was like, I got to play this fucking game. But when am I going to have time for this? And when I finally was like, you know what? I don't really have time for this right now, but I'm just going to play it. I'm just going to start playing it because I want to play it. I have other things I want to play, but I've been meaning to play this game. Everyone says it's great. Everyone says I know whose taste I trust tells me it will be right up my alley. And so I'm just going to fucking play this thing. And I played it in like, you know, around, I started playing it late last year, like around the holiday breaks of last year, where there's a bunch of other stuff to play, a bunch of new games to play. And zero regrets. I'm so glad I finally did it. So I would say if there's a thing that you really want to play, or the thing that you've been meaning to play but you keep putting off because of its gameplay length or the amount of commitment you have to do or just like its tone or whatever, I would just say go for it. Just do it. Just don't overthink it. I would say that's what's worked best for me dealing with my massive backlog is don't overthink it. Just play the thing you want to play.
I say rush forward, never look back. let the pile get bigger and bigger so that on your deathbed, you can look back and say regrets and then pass away. But there's always new games coming out.
Always.
You got to play the next thing. How about instead of creating a backlog, limit yourself to one purchase, you know, until you're done.
Who would do that? Who could do? I don't have the strength.
It's so tough. Yeah,
I was thinking that I sort of have two categories of games that I want to play in my head at any given time. One is a game that like one type of game is a game that I know that I want to play, like something like a Lego Star Wars or something like that. Like I just want to play that. And then the other is like an Inscription type game where some like word of mouth and people recommending that game to me, that's a separate category.
Sure.
So like recommendations and then like gut games is like how I do it sometimes. So I'll tend to go toward like a recommendation because like it's not something that I would typically pick for myself. Like I would have never probably picked up Inscription on my own if I hadn't heard through people that it's very good. But I'm glad I did. And so but also that adds to the backlog, too. It adds and takes away at the same time.
Mm. A new factor, and I'm sure the PlayStation service will be part of that enters into it, is just if something's on Game Pass and is maybe going away soon, mm-hmm. that will be oftentimes like, okay, I got to play this thing because I've been meaning to. But my tiebreaker, howlongtobeat.com. If you're not using that
yes.
site and you're gamer pressed for time, just check how long something is. You know, I want to play Tunic. I'm looking at it right now on How Long to Beat. Looks like it's about, you know, they say main story, 12 hours main plus extra 15 and a half hours. So I, knowing my own pace of playing games, I'm probably that's in the 16 to 20 hour range for myself. But I want to play that game. And so that feels like maybe one that could come up after I finish Kirby and Elden Ring, because that's not an enormous commitment.
Yeah, I mean,
it's only
that
that's only
well.
A season and a half of television. I can do that.
Yeah. Game length, I think, is a good thing to consider with that as well. Because if you knock out a bunch of shorties, backlog's a little smaller then, isn't it?
There you go.
Okay, this will be the last question. This is from @Ron88KeysRBDM on Twitter, and they write, situation. You're currently mad at one of your two co-hosts for some benign reason, and you have the magical power to punish them by forcing them to play any level in any game until they cry for mercy. Which level of which game would that be?
That's
wow.
That first off, I
so
would
cruel.
Never, ever, ever be that angry at either of you.
Wow.
Wow.
I
that means Nick, we can go off.
Yeah, you can go off. I'll get annoyed, but I would never subject you guys to the pipe level of Battletoads for NES. Like even if my fiance left me for one of you, I'd be like, well,
is that on the table?
I guess I just didn't live up to expectations.
I already know that in this fake scenario, that's not true and would never happen. Heather's getting a puzzle of some kind.
Yes.
And not like like a world puzzle, like a straight up just like puzzle.
Yeah.
And Nick's gonna get, what kind of games does Nick not like?
I think if you made me play League of Legends Online.
Okay. Yeah.
And that that would probably be the sort of thing where I'd just be like, I'd be so inept and everyone would fucking be yelling at me in the chat and I'd feel so bad about myself. That would probably be a pretty fitting punishment.
Maybe it would be Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But you guys have to have your mics on and you have to talk the entire time.
Oh, God. Yeah, that would be a nightmare. That'd be an absolute nightmare to me. I'm surprised you guys didn't try to punish me with Pyramid Head. Yuck.
Oh, yeah. And Matt's going to play something scary.
Stand in the hallway where you see him and he can't get you. Like, that's like...
Yeah. Matt's got to play something scary. I've got to play something online. And Heather's got to play a Sierra point-and-click adventure game that's completely inscrutable.
Christ! No!
That's it for the question block, you guys. Great questions this week.
Yeah.
Wow.
Excellent.
And hey... Great, excellent questions. And hey, that's this week's Get Played. You can follow us on social media or send us your questions at Get Played Pod. We do the question block about once a month. Our music and engineering by Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs. And a reminder, this month's We Play, You Play is Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the game, in honor of Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the movie. That episode will be landing Monday, April 25th, if you want to play along in advance.
It's, I'm not going to say what I think about it yet, but let's just say I'm playing... And I hope you play it.
You play it on Switch, right?
I'm playing it on Switch. I'm playing on the Nintendo Switch Online Genesis pack that they have there that has all these Genesis games on it.
So that's an option for you Switch gamers out there.
And I'm playing on the original hardware and on a CRT television with the original controller.
And in the past via your time port.
You get
the most authentic experience.
Guys, this has been really great. You got played.
Oh, shit.
Fuck.
I just got bullied by my game.